Technorama episode 608, dilithium healing crystals? And welcome to Technorama. This is the podcast that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are joining us for the first time, welcome. This is, well, I just described what it is.
Welcome.
And if you're joining us, welcome back. That other voice that you see and is now a picture just off to my left is the man who is practicing social distancing to its most extreme. Wonderful co-host, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Thank you. I'm sitting here floating around in the Atlantic Ocean. I'm as far as I can get away from everybody and still have internet.
If I were any further, I'd be on the other side of you.
All yeah. Right. If I was any further, I'd be on the other side. I don't know why that sounded funny.
You go all the way around the world. You end up on the other
side. Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That'll work.
Oh, the things we come up with just on the spur of the moment that sometimes work. I got to write that down. It's good. It looked like that. It was funny, so I'll probably won't ever say it again.
All right, so Chuck, what do you have on your bingo card that came up this week?
Glasses.
You got new glasses. Okay.
No, I was supposed to get new glasses, but they got the prescription wrong. So I get to go back.
Did you put them on as like...
Well, you know. I specifically asked for these glasses to be a distance of like 4 feet or just over a meter. Because, I put them on Wednesday, and I could read the computer screen nice and close fine, but I couldn't read the computer screen when I was 5 feet away. They are exactly for this studio. One focal length, not the progressives like I've got. So when I'm looking at the web camera and looking at the screen up here, I'm not going like this. Putting my nose up.
Those are supposed to be single focus. I got you.
Okay. Yeah, they're single focus, and they're exactly that instant. So... They said, well, we got you medium distance. I said, no, medium distance to me is just a touch farther. So they went back to the eye doctor, the optometrist. He came out with these two round lenses, put them over the new glasses, and I went, bullseye. Tape those suckers, and I'm out of here.
Yeah, a little duct tape.
She said, no, we'll get you new lenses. So they will look exactly like these. You won't know which ones I'm wearing when I switch them because they're exactly the same frames. I will be able to see clearly.
You need like a little piece of tape or something on the back just so you don't look at them.
I probably will put like a little red dab of nail polish or something. I mean, it'll be easy once I put them on. I'll go like this, and if nothing changes, they're the wrong glasses.
Yeah. And I do, you know what? I do the same thing. I've got a pair of reading glasses, single focus, just for the computer. Although my focus is about an arm's length, which I can still read with them, and I can see the monitor. It's, you know. Looks pretty well.
And then Saturday morning, I went to do my standard Saturday morning pool chores.
I was just realizing, these are the ones I'm talking about.
Good thing you got them on.
Yeah.
Let's do my Saturday morning pool chores and there's a backwash hose. So when you set the thing to backwash, it pumps out the hose, flushes out the filter and goes off in the yard. Well, about 5 years in the Phoenix sun was all that thing could take.
What, it just dry rot and
pretty
flower
much
out?
We had a gusher.
Oh no.
So went out and got a new hose. I go, yeah, I get to go out twice in 1 week, you know, masked up and everything. So yeah, we're taking precautions. It's getting a little stale sitting around home, but you know, any excuse to get out, I'll take it. How about you?
When you say mask, did you put on a Vader helmet or something? Or did you...
No. You put one of those old trick-or-treating like Casper masks with the little slit for the mouth tongue.
I've got a picture of myself in a as Buck Rogers with one of those masks. Exactly.
That's not the right kind of mask, people. Although some people will have you believe you can get away with that. No.
Yeah, I asked Dad the other day, did you wear your mask when you went to the grocery store? Yeah. The Lone Ranger mask? No. No, Dad.
The Batman cowl. That's completely opposite of what you need. It covers the top part of your face and nothing on the bottom. Yeah. Like you're doing
Spider-Man be closer, but yeah.
And you have to talk like this when you go in as Batman.
Yeah.
All right. Shall we begin the show?
Yes.
We do want to take a minute just to recognize and appreciate former Mythbuster and White Rabbit Project. Grant Imahara passed away this last week. We did an interview with him. As Craig noted, it was the first interview where Craig and I were actually face-to-face for an interview with our guest. He was remote. We were in... Where were we?
The Podcast Expo, I think.
Okay, so Ontario, California, and he was probably...
Well, 2006, so it was Ontario,
California. Yeah, it was Ontario, California. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We appreciate him immensely. Miss him terribly. Taken from us way too soon, like many other people. So
I've been amazed. I mean, I know that Mythbusters had a big impact on a lot of people.
Oh yeah.
And especially, and not just Adam Savage and everybody else. I'm talking about, and Grant too. But it was amazing to see all the tributes and recognition that he was getting, after he, when he passed away, how many lives he touched. And even Harrison, you know, came and said, "Dad, did you hear?" I was like, "Yeah." And we talked about it for a few minutes because he grew up, you know, watching Mythbusters with me. So, yeah, it's pretty sad. And, you know, thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family.
Absolutely. Okay. So with our moment of solemnness over, let's get into the feedback. We've got our question of the week.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day.
Every day?
Yes, every day I see letters.
Reach right and pull one out.
A, B, C, D.
Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Mailman, mail today.
Hang on, someone's at the door.
Yeah. All right, we'll be right back.
I get fooled by that every time.
You bark.
Our question of the week last week was, what is your favorite TV or movie car? And we got lots of responses from the Technorama podcast post.
Hey,
yes,
I do see some common themes in here. So,
yeah, I kind of figured we would. There's a few that people gravitate to. Steve says, while I'm still a Mustang man at heart, I do love Lola.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool car.
Craig Glasner says, the police spinner from Blade Runner, which I got to see on display at Seattle's Museum of Pop Culture. That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
John Miller Jr. went with the old standard Kit from Knight Rider.
Hey, how could you not love Kit?
Well, John Kratzer says he wants the 1964 Aston Martin DB5 from Goldfinger.
That's a good one, too.
Very cool. That's a bigger car. It seems like it gets bigger every time I see it. Like, wow.
The Aston Martin?
Yeah. It seemed like a small car back in the 70s. Well, then again, so did a lot of cars back in the 70s.
That's the one, if I'm not mistaken, that's the one that is at the Spy History Museum in Washington.
I don't know for sure.
Well, the only reason I say that, we didn't get to go in the museum because it was closed for renovation, but it was sitting right there in the front in the window. So,
well, if I make it going, back
oh,
in
I
DC,
want to go in
I'll
there so
that.
Bad, but.
Weber Baker says, car 54, where are you? You'd never know where the car is. you call it with your keychain now. Car 54, where are you? I am in row 4.
Right.
Digital Dan Hook says, Back to the Future 2 Hover DeLorean. We got another DeLorean there. What is on your page? What responses did you get?
Well, let's see. On mine... again, Doc's DeLorean from my buddy Nick. JT Shea says the DeLorean or the Wonder Bug.
Herbie?
I'm not sure if he's talking about Herbie. I guess the Wonder Bug is the Croft Super Show, this speed you know, the Dune Buggy
Speed Buggy and Speed Racer?
Looks like Speed Buggy, but it's not. It's like thing. The bumper, you have to go Google it.
What else?
Herbie the Love Bug.
Got one of those.
Brian Parker said that. Yeah, Daniel Petrowski says Kit from Knight Rider or Doc's DeLorean. I'm disappointed nobody said car. Kit, you know, Knight Rider. Craig Glasner again, the police spinner. Britt Helms, Christine from the movie Christine.
CJ said Christine also.
Ah, Christine.
Nobody said my mother the car.
Huh? What?
Nobody said my mother the car.
Yeah, somebody else is showing their age.
Chitty
Chuck.
Chitty bang bang.
Yeah, chitty chitty bang bang from Lisa. My buddy CJ Lamb and PC Hearing both have Kit on there, And another one of my favorites, Grant Prochoco says the A-Team van. And JT Say agrees with him. Keith Smith has a picture of the Bandit, Bandit's car.
Oh, wow,
Trans Am.
Yep.
But that's a beautiful car. I loved that car.
They could remake that movie now with a Tesla.
Yeah, it would work. Charles McFall says Baby from Supernatural.
Oh, good choice. Yep.
And what's on your page there, Chuck?
Mentioned Christine. We already mentioned Herbie. Jonathan Strickland says the 1959 Cadillac Fleetwood Series 75 that Doc used in the original Muppet movie. Ooh, good call. Very deep cut, obscure call. Love it. Norbert Davis.
Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
By the way, John Miller Jr. says Carr was voiced by Optimus Prime himself, Peter Cullen. I didn't know that.
He had that voice.
Yeah.
We'll get to the interstate in 20 minutes, Dave. Kit, I'm ripping out your battery. Deal with it.
Norbert Davis says the original George Barris Batmobile from the TV show. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Another Kit. We got Herbie for me, too. Kit, Mark McCoy says more of a top three for him because he couldn't be contained to just one. He said the submarine Lotus Esprit from Spy Who Loved Me. Good call. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and the 89 Keaton Batmobile. We got another James Bond's Aston Martin from Marty. Mike says, I always liked the Dodge Ram that Walker Texas Ranger had. Okay. We got the Dodge Charger from Nash Bridges that Mike also put on there. We've got another one for Bandit's car. Clinton says the original Batmobile. He just posted a picture. Oh, we got the Monkey's car.
Yeah, that's like a GTO. It looks like it is a GTO on the front, but it was like stretched out.
Yeah, stretched out and converted to a more of a station wagon kind of thing.
Yeah. I remember that. I used to watch the Monkees all the time.
Teresa says the General Lee. The Chariot ATV.
I know. Confederate flag is on it, but I do love that car. But.
Oh, Steve brought us a good one. Says the Chariot ATV from the Netflix series Lost in Space.
Which?
As it is versatile vehicle.
Hey, actually, I've got the Chariot back. From the Netflix one. I got Netflix the original one. Lost in Space one.
Yeah. Eric Miller says, TV's Munsters coach. I thought both of the Munsters cars were cool. There were
Grandpa's coffin car. And
and then the converted, whatever that was, Model A or Model 2. That was a nice chop and drop.
Weren't those were George Barris ones as well.
Yep. Oh, we have a runner-up too. The Blues Brothers. The Bluesmobile. With speaker, I hope. With the big horn speaker on top. Another Stuart from the UK, of course, is James Bond's Aston Martin. Greg Kloibert wants Kit and Airhawk from Airhawk. Hey, Charles McFall is posting on both of us, but he gave us a different answer for his favorite car. What's up with that?
In the chat room, David Juckum, I hope I'm saying his last name right. He says Luke's speeder.
Hey, I'll take that. That qualifies as a car for us. Absolutely. Yeah. Isn't that what you want? When you first saw a New Hope, like, I want one of those right away.
Yeah, it's like floating. You're like, whoa. Uh-huh.
And moving fast, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes.
No trunk space, though.
Yeah, he had to put the droids on the back of it. Just set them on back. Hold on.
You hit a bump and R2's out of the passenger seat.
Yeah, you know, C-3PO's sitting up there. You know he can't hold on to anything.
It was just a movie, Craig. Let it go. Let it go.
No, it's not. I disagree. We'll just disagree to agree to disagree. There you go.
We're going to play the out music. Take that. Which brings us right into the history time. Okay, kids, take out your pencils. There's an exam at the end of this history. This is the way history went for us on July 22nd, 2020. It is the 204th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar, and there are 162 days remaining in 2020. It was on this date in 1598 that William Shakespeare's play, The Merchant of Venice, is entered on the Stationer's Register, and by decree of Queen Elizabeth, the Stationer's Register license printed works, giving the Crown tight control over all published material.
Hmm. It was also on that date in 1793 that Alexander Mackenzie reached the Pacific Ocean, becoming the first recorded human to complete a transcontinental crossing of North America.
How did they know some Native Americans didn't do it first?
Well, first recorded.
Recorded.
Yeah, that's the operative word there.
He did a podcast of the day the whole way across the country.
Hey, it may have been sketched into a tree or something. Who knows? This is the first recorded
one. Day 183, South Dakota. I think it'll be called South Dakota someday.
Maybe.
It was on this day in 1933 that aviator Wiley Post returns to Floyd Bennett Field in New York City, completing the first solo flight around the world in 7 days, 18 hours, and 49 minutes. That was 1933, kids.
Hmm. And it was 58 years ago today that the Merida 1 spacecraft flew erratically several minutes after launch and had to be destroyed. Several minutes. It's like, oh, look at it. Well,
should we get it?
Maybe we should kill it.
Can you get it now? Try again with the butterfly net, yeah. Dave.
Yeah.
Happy birthday goes out of this date to German-Russian physicist and academic Georg Wilhelm Rechmann, born on this date in 1711.
All right, brace yourselves. French mathematician and engineer Gaspard de Prony was born 265 years ago today.
That wasn't too bad, Craig.
Okay, there you go.
Friedrich Bessel, the German mathematician and astronomer, was born on the same date in 1784.
And German physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Gustav Ludwig Hertz was born on this date in 1877.
Hey, Craig, you want a Hertz donut?
It hurts my brain.
That's the Hertz from cycles per second, megahertz, gigahertz, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So when you hear that man's name, wish him a happy birthday.
Yeah, my megahertz.
Anytime someone says Hertz, take a drink. American mathematician Geraldine Claudette Darden is 84 today.
And also turning 80 today is Canadian-American game show host and producer Alex Trebek.
I'll take Jeopardy for 100, Craig.
Wrong.
What is Jeopardy for 100? Also born on the same date in 1941, American singer, songwriter, producer George Clinton.
Atomic Dog. Bow, wow, wow, yippee, oh, yippee.
Yeah, that George Clinton.
I saw that coming. Also turning 77 today is American singer, songwriter, and actor Bobby Sherman.
I'm thinking about singing a Bobby Sherman song on Saturday Night at Karaoke next week. Maybe.
Oh boy.
English singer, songwriter, and keyboard player Rick Davies, not one of the Kinks Davies. This is the Supertramp Rick Davies, is 76 today.
And also turning 74 today is American actor, director, and producer Danny Glover.
I'm getting too old for this crap. American singer, songwriter, and drummer Don Henley. There's a lot of singers and songwriters and actors today. Sorry, no kids. Yeah. Don Henley was born on this date in 1947.
And also turning 65 today is American actor William Dafoe.
William
Dafoe.
Wilhelm. American singer, songwriter, and producer Keith Sweat is 59.
And also born on the same date in 1964, American actor, producer, and screenwriter David Spade.
Also turning 48 today is Canadian actor, director, and producer Colin Ferguson.
And last but not least, also born on the same date in 1992, American singer and actress Selena Gomez.
And I somehow don't have the birthdays in here. Quickly get to... I fell apart on my... I was derelict in my Technorama duties. So let's get to the birthday calendar. I'm going to pull these up in real time and copy and paste them into the show notes later. Come on, Google. Where'd they go? It's July 22nd through the 28th. Yes? Something
There you go.
So, the 23rd is John Miller Jr. from Lancaster, South Carolina. Good thing we didn't miss that today.
I know.
Dave Perillo from Megapodtastic is on the 23rd. The 26th is Aaron Heath from Adelaide, Australia. And on the 27th, we have the wife of Will the Computer Guy. So happy birthday to all of you. If it is your birthday this week, we wish you all the best. Have a safe and happy birthday. And if you're not on the calendar and you want to be on the calendar for next time go around, or maybe you're next week and thinking about Should I or should... Is this right for me? Is Technorama right for me? Ask your doctor.
Yes.
And then go put your name on the birthday calendar at chuckchat.com/wiki or chuckchat.com/birthday. Either will work.
Hey, if he doesn't give it to you, we can get you to you, you know, under the table.
Your first birthday is free?
Yeah, that's right.
Is that where we're going with this?
That's right.
You know what? It's just enough time to hear this song one more time, so let's all get up and march around the living room.
All right, I'm going to do it. It's always an exciting end to that.
That's where our audience just went. They just marched out the door.
Yeah. You said, come back in.
Please come back. Please come back. All right. First news story up. Oh, we have a news story.
News and weather, everyone.
I hit random buttons and sound comes out.
Yay.
Scientists have unlocked the secret of how those ultra black fish absorb light. This is fascinating because it's not virus related. In the darkest depths of the ocean, while little to no light from the surface penetrates, unusual creatures thrive, many of whom create their own light via bioluminescence to hunt for prey, among other uses. But several species of fish have evolved the opposite survival strategy. They are ultra black. Ooh, good band name. Absorbing nearly all light that strikes their skin, according to the new paper in Current Biology. Ah, I see what they did there. Current Biology. Karen Osborne of the Smithsonian's Museum of Natural History became intrigued by the creatures upon finding she was unable to capture these ultra-black fish on camera while working in the field. Well, not so much a field, but the sea. If you're in the field, you wouldn't see many fish. You'd see more like grass.
There's a fish there. It's not good for the fish.
She was trying to photograph specimens caught in the team's deep sea trawl nets. Quote, two specimens, the Anoplagaster cornuta and the Idiocanthus astrostomus. Wow.
Say that three times fast.
No. They were the only two fish over the course of 6 years of fieldwork that I was able to get decent photographs of, Osborne told Ours. To do so, she used a Canon Mark II DSLR body and a 65mm macro lens with four strobes, then tested various lighting setups by taking lots and lots of photographs. Finally, she adjusted contrast and applied a high-pass filter uniformly across the images and that to better bring out the details. It still wasn't sufficient to capture most of the specimens caught in the trawl net. Over the years, I deleted thousands of failed shots. Sounds like my photography skills. the other fish, they were just useless because I couldn't bring out the details in the photos, she added. It didn't matter how you set up the camera lighting. They just sucked up all the light. I wish I had a few of them now to illustrate this. To discover why this was, the Osborne team teamed up with Duke University biologist Sonka Janssen, among others, and laboratory measurements showed that indeed these ultra black fish absorb more than 99.5% of any light that hit their skin. If we could put that in solar cells, we'd be grand right now.
Yeah.
We'd just lay fish out on the roof and see what happens.
Why are all these birds here now?
What's that
story? Where, you know, you take the splinter out of the elephant's foot give a pig a pancake. There you go.
And if you give a moose a muffin, there was another one. Yeah. This is a handy adaptation for survival in the dark depths of the sea, where even a few photons of light, say from hungry nearby bioluminescent organisms, can give away a fish's position to a predator. Mm-hmm. The researchers also discovered the secret to this highly efficient light absorption, melanin, a pigment also found in human skin that protects us from damage to sunlight. The melanin is stuffed into granules known as melanosomes, which in turn are contained within cells known as melanophores. Mm-hmm. You can see where this is going. They form a continuous layer in the dermis, the deep layer of the skin, according to Osborne. This arrangement provides a continuous and unbroken layer of pigment-containing cells and ensures that this layer is the first thing encountered by light hitting the fish, she said. The pigment effectively absorbs most of the light that strikes the granule. So, we now know that if you take the melanin in our skin and go crazy with it, you will have some really dark fish.
Yeah, there's a picture of them right there. A
couple of them. Yep. Don has been putting them up on the screen for us.
Yeah, they're dark already. And you can see the, a little more than outline, of course, but you can see the profile of one. That's pretty
cool. That'd be really frustrating, though, if you're trying to take these pictures and you hit them with four strobes and nothing comes out. Like, where'd all the light go?
Yeah. Or you catch one by on your fishing line, you pull it up and it looks like you caught a black hole.
Nothing can escape the fish, not even light.
That's right.
Would you like the next? Well, this one's a little brighter subject.
Yeah, it's a very much brighter subject. Speaking of opposites, well, not really speaking about, well, it's an opposite of that. So the first images from the ESA and NASA's solar orbiter is now available to the public, including the closest pictures ever taken of the sun. So don't stare at it really too close, right?
That's no, the solar no, orbiter's okay. job.
Yeah, that's the solar orbiter's job. So solar orbiter is an international collaboration between the European Space Agency and NASA to study our closest star. Can you guess? Yep, the sun.
Alpha Centauri.
It was launched on February 9th, 2020, and the spacecraft completed its closest path to the sun in mid-June. It was a different one. I thought they launched it a couple years ago. Maybe it was a different one that I was thinking of. These unprecedented pictures of the sun are the closest we've ever obtained, says Holly Gilbert, NASA's project scientist for the mission, and at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. The amazing images will help scientists piece together the sun's atmospheric layers, which is important for understanding how it drives space weather near Earth and throughout the solar system. Said, we didn't expect such great results so early. What did they expect? They sent us... Anyway, these images show that the solar orbiter is off to an excellent start. So, let's see, getting to the point was no simple feat. The novel coronavirus, speaking of viruses, I was trying to find stories that didn't relate to it, but...
It's tangentially involved in here.
Yeah, so it forced the mission control at ESA Operating Center in Darmstadt, Germany, to close down completely for more than a week. During commissioning, the period when each instrument is extensively tested. ESOC's staff were reduced to a skeleton crew, but all essential personnel worked from home. The pandemic required us to perform critical operations remotely, the first time we had ever done that, said Russell Howard, principal investigator for the solar orbiter's imagers.
See, even the astronomers can adapt.
Yeah, well, we remember about a few weeks ago, we had a story about them operating the Mars rover remotely.
Operating from home. Guy's got his Xbox controller. Except it takes, what, about 8 minutes or 15 minutes or something to get the commands to Mars?
Yeah, they have to, like, stack them up and then have it do certain things and then wait for the results, I guess, to make sure it's where it's at.
Your rover fell in the ditch 15 minutes ago. You lose.
It's sitting there trying to get itself out.
Please insert 25 cents.
But these pictures did pull out something called campfires, which is what these little spots all over the sun. Mm-hmm. And it says the campfires we're talking about here are little nephews of solar flares, at least a million, perhaps a billions times smaller. Bergens said, David Bergens, the astrophysicist at the Royal Observatory of Belgium in Brussels. When looking at the new high resolution EUI images, they are literally everywhere we look.
They're everywhere. They're everywhere. Like Chicken Man.
Yeah, so there's some more detail in here about where they're found, but you can go look at the pictures. There's one, it almost looks like little tiny orange balls. Looks like they're so close to the sun. And then this animation kind of flipping back and forth, but it's kind of cool to see.
The animated GIF is hypnotic if you stare at it, because there's a circle, then a square, then a circle, then a square, and it makes your eyes go crazy.
I'm hearing some Pink Floyd music.
It's dark side of the moon, not the bright side of the sun.
Not the bright side of the sun. Oh, my bad.
Was that the B side of dark side of the moon?
Yeah. Flip it over. It's the bright side of the sun.
All right, let's go on to another crazy story. A man collects $95 million jackpot dressed as Darth Vader to hide identity. Because, of course, we see stories like that. We have to put them on the show. Friday, Jamaican lottery winner W. Brown dressed up as the iconic Star Wars villain Darth Vader to pick up his $95 million jackpot to keep his identity secret from others. Brown said he hid his real identity because he kept mostly to himself and hadn't told anyone about his jackpot win, according to the Jamaican Gleaner. Brown wanted to make the right decision first before spending any of the lottery winnings. Quote, I'm not going to do this in Jamaican accent, so sorry to disappoint you there.
Yeah.
I want to decide what is the best thing to do before spending anything. I need to decide what my goals are, but I know I want to own a bus.
That's a start.
Didn't they do that in Sense8? I wanted to buy a bus.
Oh, yeah. I just thought that was funny when I read that quote. I was like, I need to decide what my goals are. I went, oh, okay. He's got a good head in the shoulder, but I know I want to own a bus. Okay.
Maybe he wants to be in the tour business.
Hey, for $95 million, I think he can make it happen.
Make a grand old bus. I want to be on his tours.
Yeah.
You can buy the whole bus company. You can buy the bus factory. Brown recently bought the winning ticket at the Die Enz Sports Bar in Maypen.
D-Enz.
It's D-Enz. D-Enz of everything you know. I wasn't going to do a Jamaican accent. The winning numbers are nearly the same ones Brown had been choosing for the past 20 years. His picks are based on rakes and their meanings. In the Jamaican culture, a rake is a premonition, dream, or omen that foreshadows what will happen. Life has always been very rough. I come from a poor family. Sometimes I couldn't attend school because my parents didn't have it. But I told myself that God will help me one day so I can help my family. So now he can get his own school bus to get himself to school.
That's right.
So,
and you know, that I read that the reason that people do, and other people have shown up in different masks to pick up their checks like this, because in Jamaica, it's a small island, and if they know what you look like, you're easy to target to go rob.
Jamaica's not that small, but yeah.
No, but I mean, it's easy to, you know, find somebody by the way they look. That's what I read. I was like, why would somebody show up in the Darth Vader outfit? And that's why.
Yeah, I didn't want to be recognized. All right, we're going to take a real short
break.
Oh,
here you go. Yeah. I'm sorry, real quick. I thought it was somewhere else, but it says, unfortunately, Jamaica is not like other markets. In other markets, they don't necessarily do it, but here, I think they ought to do it, showing up in a mask, to keep themselves safe. We're not going to tell them not to do it because of their safety is paramount of importance, of course. But that's where that's why. Anyway, so yes.
Good plan. All right, quick break. We'll come back with some more stuff, because this is the
more
show that
stuff.
Has stuff.
All right.
Hi, this is Grant Imahara from Mythbusters, and Myth Confirmed, you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Did you ever wonder why the early space shuttles had a white external fuel tank and then the later ones did not?
I have no idea. Seriously. Not a clue.
Mm-hmm. Because once they filled that tank, they didn't want rays and things interfering. That's the technical term.
What?
Rays and things. Rays and things.
Wow! Thank you, Professor Mossy.
Them raisin,
like raisin bread, raisin muffins, raisin things.
Wow!
For it's raisin things, it's grapes and things.
Wait, Californium raisins.
Hey! Californium raisin things.
Through the grapevine.
We've broken the show again.
story's over now. Move on.
I like Ben. The story's over now. Move on.
Yeah. Hey, I'm surprised nobody said raising Arizona and things.
Raising Kane.
Yeah, raising Kane.
All right. Yeah.
Actually, so that's what we do here in the South when we're partying up. We're raising Kane.
All right. Where were we? We were on a shout out to the chat room. Let's see who's out there listening. We got Dave Chuckham. We've got John Miller Jr. joining us live Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern time. Craig Glasner is out there. A lot of our respondents that were doing the car thing earlier. Mike Robeson. That's all I see. What do you got?
That's all I got.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us, everybody.
Four.
We've had more. We've had less. It was a good night.
Yeah.
Glad you wanted to hang out with us tonight. Hey, we're just sitting around.
If you got one, we're doing great.
We're reading bizarre stories. So, and we know a number of you download the audio later. Some of you watch it on YouTube. You do what fits your lifestyle.
Some of you torrent it without paying us.
They're going right around our paywall.
That's right.
The paywall, it's like the toll booth on Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
Someone's got to go back and get a.
Hey, who's got a dime? Who's got a dime?
That's our paywall.
Yeah.
You know what we're talking about.
There's wide open spaces around the whole thing.
That's right, but you still have to go through. You can't go around. All right, let's do the Remember When segment. I think it's your turn.
Okay. And, you know, we always love space stuff, and according with space stuff, there's a treasure trove of things that have been left behind by history, and some of them get auctioned off. So, yes. Just to put it plainly. So, dozens of consigners auctioned off priceless pieces of space and tech memorabilia this week, including a rocket engine that carried Neil Armstrong to the moon, and an assortment of meteorites recovered from remote locations across the globe. So this week's auction, which ended Thursday night, sold items from about 45 collectors, including Steve Jurvetson, the SpaceX and Tesla board member and Silicon Valley investor. And all it was 288 items, which sold for $690,000.
Hmm.
I bet that guy could buy a bus and some of these things. From the last story. Anyway, among some of the more valuable items on the block were Robin's medallion, a commemorative coin minted for astronauts on voyage from Apollo 7 that flew with Ed Gibson in 1972 trip to the moon. It sold for $50,000 and $50,907, about 10 times more than expected.
Wow.
A small American flag that astronaut Dave Scott carried in his pocket while he walked on the moon during NASA's Apollo 15 mission in 1971.
How did they know?
huh?
How did they know that he carried it in his pocket?
Well, it's got something written on it. I don't know. Maybe he wrote down. I don't know. They didn't. It's not like, oh, he went through security on when he got back to Earth.
I accidentally put it in the. It was stuck in his pocket as it went through the laundry. Oops.
Yeah. Who was this? Oh, anyway, it was expected to fetch $2,500, but it got more than $30,000. Nice. That's more like it. $2,500. Anyway, R&R Auction has become a destination for a cohort of space fans with disposable income who are obsessed with preserving and monetizing pieces of NASA history.
Would it be worth more if, you know, some guy said, oh, man, I got to sneeze.
It wasn't that small, I hope. It's like a handkerchief. There were some other items in there. One of them, I'm looking at a picture here, is the a spoon used by astronaut Edgar Mitchell during Apollo 14. Mission. Mission spelled wrong. Mission.
Missoing.
It sold for $25,000.
For a spoon. Wow. That's amazing. For a spoon. Is that what he ate his steak and eggs breakfast with?
Well, it's got his name on it, so I guess they can't mix it up with the other astronauts' stuff.
Edgar D. Mitchell. That's pretty cool. I would have hung on to my, I would have hung on to my spoon for, you know, 25 grand.
Well, yeah.
Gonna need this. Edgar still with us? Someday.
I don't know if he is.
You know, this is 50 years ago, man. You gonna hang on to your things?
I got. Well, I've been around for 50 years.
Yeah, and we're still hanging on to you.
Hey, Edgar Mitchell is still with us, looks like.
Good. Good, good, good.
Yeah.
Let's also, who's still with us is our wonderful patrons. We love our patrons. These are the people who donate as little as a dollar a show and get extra content and their name shouted out on the show because they're the financial backers of this. This is our CFO, our board of directors right here. They include
They get extra content. We didn't say it was good.
They didn't either. We get some feedback on it. Alexis Duran, Elmer Elstad, Amy Bowen, Abner Braverman, thank you very much. Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer, Danny Mortensen, all the way from down under, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros. He's down under Florida. down under Georgia. This is where Florida is. Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrauen. Thank you, Christina. Thank you, Kyle and Leon and Mark Kilfoyle and Mike Wills. Thank you, Nightgig Studios. Utmost appreciation to Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Wetchie, Steve Therian, Spiffy, and our newest dynamic duo, Steve Cody and Steve London. Thank you, everybody, for being part of the financial backing of this. We have, you know, costs that come in to operating this show and unexpected costs that come up occasionally. I think it's about on schedule for time to re-up the Wirecast software, which is how we bring you the video. So thank you. We've got that covered. It's just a non-issue now. So appreciate it very much.
By the way, we got three Steves. Do we have another Mark?
We're looking for a
Harold. I want to balance this out.
Well, some of these people are using aliases, so maybe.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
All right. Let's fade those guys out and stop it because this is the part of the show where we do...
The Empire Good Time Band, as I was playing that.
The Imperial Marching Band.
Yeah. What'd you do in the service?
I played the clarinet.
Is that the playout song for Craig?
No, that's our Pass Me the Remote music.
Oh, right. Of course.
Because I've got a show on Amazon Prime that we watched a little while ago. I think it was a couple of months called Tales from the Loop.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I think I've seen the promo for that. How was it?
It was pretty good. It kind of has a Twilight Zone vibe to it, but it's not... standalone episodes. Well, I mean, you can just jump in and watch one, but I recommend starting at the beginning and going through it because they lead you from different characters around this town. It's centered around a town that has some sort of underground research facility that somewhat resembles a particle collider, but they don't really say what it's for. And it's got some futuristic elements like hover vehicles and walking robots, remote controlled robots. I mean, big robots that look more like the AT-STs on Empire or on which one am I missing?
The one with the four legs or the two legs?
Two legs. No, not the AT-ATs, the AT-ATs, but the forest ones.
Right.
The Ewoks beat up.
Yeah, so the STs.
Robotics, some of that stuff. But it's a personal story. So you get to meet these people and the troubles they go on. I thought it was pretty interesting. From a science fiction standpoint, I'd like to see more because I think there's more of this town and more of the characters to explore. It did have one storyline in there that dealt with alternate reality. So one of the characters crosses over into an alternate universe, and I thought that was pretty good. I thought it was pretty good. I would give this an 8.5 out of 10. On our magic meter, whatever we're calling that thing. So Amazon Prime, Tales from the Loop. Take a look for it if you've got it. I think it was like 10 episodes, not real long. Your typical season of shows on these days. The effects were good. Writing was good. Acting was good. I mean, it's not an action adventure constantly moving. There's some time to think and go, what happened to that guy? Or Where did we go? Oh, yeah. So, fun from a sci-fi standpoint.
Oh, by the way, Jeffrey Byers is calling you out. He said Return of the Jedi.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I did a thing. Let's put it this way. I wasn't going to sign up for another service. However,
did you get Peacock?
Yeah, let me tell you why. So,
guess that
let
one.
Me tell you why. I'll tell you why. So the reason is, my family is a fan of Psych, the TV show.
Okay.
You ever watch that?
No.
Okay. Psych is great. Lots of pop culture jokes and stuff. And there's like a lot of inside jokes.
Yeah.
As the show goes on. And this show has ended, but they did a movie two years ago. And then they had Psych 2. It's another, hour and a half movie. And it was going to be on Peacock. I was like, okay, well, I knew you could sign up for Peacock for free, but I read an article that said, but they weren't including that movie in with the free thing. I went, oh, are you kidding me? So I thought, okay, I want to see it. I want to support it. So it was $30 for the year. So I said, okay, I'm going to at least sign up for 1 year because that was their discount before they launched. So I said, okay, I'll do that. So I signed up for it. Actually, watched the Psych 2 movie. It turns out that they did give it out for free, Psych 2, so along with everything else. So you can watch Peacock just ad-supported, and that's what I was going to do. But anyway, I loved the show. It was fun. Like I said, a lot of inside jokes. Timothy Olmanson, who played Lassiter in the show and the last movie, he actually had, well, not in the last movie, he had a stroke. So he wasn't in the last movie per se. He was in a brief cameo, but he's made some good strides in, recovery. And he was in this one more. Actually, the story kind of revolved around him, and it was good to see him back in there. And the whole cast together works so well. They all work so well together. It's a fun watch. If you haven't watched the show, I recommend. Actually, Chuck, I'm going to say you and Donna might like it.
But can I find it anywhere other than subscribing to Peacock?
It's on Prime.
Oh, it is. Okay. And the name of the show again was?
Psych.
Psych. Okay.
Yeah. He pretends to be a psychic. And him and his friend, you got to watch it. You'll like it.
Okay.
I think you'll like it. But anyway, the movie was good. You can sign up for Peacock without having to pay for it. That's the bottom line. Which, anyway, I did.
First month's free. Come on, kids. Yeah. Just a taste.
Yeah. I won't keep it, but I do, you know what? I do kind of like, Peacock itself. There's different channels. They got like Unsolved Mysteries is one channel. It's almost like the Pluto TV. I don't know if you've looked at that.
No, I've heard about it, and I'm eager to take a look because I've been hearing some good things that are coming out of Pluto.
Yeah. Pluto is pretty good. So they have channels that have things running 24/7 on that particular theme or show. And same thing with Peacock. It was kind of like the same thing. And there's an Office shorts, and then all it is little clips from The Office, just continuously running. And that was kind of fun to watch. So anyway.
All right. We've got one more article. One more, and then it's in the Geek Library. So we have to have the Geek Library music. Never noticed the strings as much as that particular play. Dun, 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 dun. Sounded kind of like a Men in Black thing going on there. Listen.
I keep seeing Eric's in my head when I hear that whistle now. Because we did it so many
times. Yeah.
We've made so many jokes about it. Hey, listen, everybody. If you haven't watched the animated series, the Star Trek, the original series animated, there's a scene where Spock and things were getting a little weird on the bridge. And Eric's the orange guy with three arms. He just did this characteristic. Yeah.
It was out of place. And it was so perfectly out of place that it was just, it was.
I had to stop it. What? I had to pause it because I was laughing so hard. I think I rewound it and watched him do it again.
One of those moments. We'll be recording another Topic is Trek on Wednesday, so look for that coming down the feed.
Episode 71. Yeah, go check us out over there. Topic is Trek.
Topicistrek.com. There, if I can do it on that show, I can do it on this show. All right, we have one final article. AI is helping some drone swarms navigate through crowded, unfamiliar spaces. Drone swarms frequently fly outside for a reason. It's difficult for the robotic flyers to navigate in tight spaces without hitting each other. Well, Caltech researchers may have a way for those drones to fly indoors. However, they've developed a machine learning algorithm, Global to Local Safe Autonomy Synthesis. Were you following along with that? It's GLAS, GLASS.
Yeah. Say that three times fast. Forget the other.
Global to Local Safe Autonomy Synthesis. Global to Local Safe Autonomy Synthesis. Global Local. It's easy if you do it in a song.
Yeah.
Okay. That's right. That's what lets the swarms navigate crowded, unmapped environments. The system works by giving each drone a degree of independence that lets it adapt to a changing environment. Instead of relying on existing maps or the routes, or routes if you prefer, of every other drone in the swarm, GLASS has each machine learning how to navigate a given space on its own, even as it coordinates with others. This decentralized model both helps the drones improvise and make scaling this swarm easier as the computing is spread across many robots. An additional tracking controller, the Neural Swarm, helps these drones compensate for aerodynamic interactions such as downwash from a robot flying overhead. It's already more reliable than a commercial controller that doesn't account for aerodynamics with far smaller tracking errors. This could be useful for drone light shows, of course, but it could also help with more vital operations. Search and rescue drones could safely comb areas in packs, while self-driving cars could keep traffic jams and collisions to a minimum. It may take a while before there are implementations outside the lab, but don't be surprised if flocks of drones become relatively commonplace. Pretty cool stuff.
I wish somebody get those drones out of my yard. The video is pretty cool. You can see, I mean, I wouldn't say it's riveting, but you can see the models that they were building, and then they can see them in practice with little tiny drones. And you can see some of them look like some of them were asserting themselves, and the other ones would back off to let it give it a path. And
you go first.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Four drones at a four-way stop. They're all waving each other on.
Right.
That's called deadlock, gridlock. All right, that takes care of it. Oh, wait, we got one more. We've got one more, and this is Craig. It's all yours, man.
Okay, so Move Over Human Grill Cooks. I'm looking at you, Chuck. White Castle is teaming up with...
That was my retirement job.
Yeah, White Castle is teaming up with Miso Robotics to... And that sounds like a lyric from... Mr. Roboto. This is Roboto. To test an automated sous chef, the aptly named Flippy, the AI-enabled kitchen assistant,
Flippy
is set to join
McFlip
the staff.
Face.
Do what?
Flippy McFlip Face?
Yeah, Flippy. Yes. An AI-enabled kitchen assistant is set to join the staff at Chicago area burger joint for a trial run that could usher in a new era of robot hash slingers. Since its unveiling in 2018, Flippy has cooked more than 40,000 pounds of fried food. Who's eating it? I don't know. He's just making it and throwing it in the corner.
One guy.
Including 9,000 sandwiches at LA's Dodger Stadium, the Arizona Diamondbacks Chase Field, and two Cali Burger locations, where it works alongside humans to increase productivity and consistency because the humans don't want to lose their jobs. They were trying to keep up with the stupid robot.
I'm going to go down to Chase Field next weekend and get an interview with this robot.
The robot. I think automation is here to stay. And this is the first example of a really large, credible player starting down that journey. Miso Robotics CEO Buck Jordan told TechCrunch. Buck. of White Castle collab. Engineers are working to install the latest version of Flippy at an undisclosed location in Chicago, where the mechanical fry cook will be integrated into the restaurant's point of sale system, allowing it to work as soon as an order is placed. Customers in the Windy City can keep an eye out for Flippy starting in September. So let's see, Miso's standard billing price is $30,000 up front and it's a subscription model. It's $15,000 a year.
Maintenance.
Yeah, I guess so.
If you got a robot that's working over a greasy stove, you're going to need maintenance. Trust me.
Yeah. John Miller Jr. said resistance is futile, Chuck. I was thinking
when the when the singularity comes, this is going to be flinging hot fries at you.
That's right.
But think about it. You know, if we're in a lockdown and you can't interact with people, you could go up to a robot and get your burger. So keeps them open, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, pretty soon you can just go hit the touch screen, order what you want, and just go to the drive-thru and just throw it on a mechanical arm, throw it in your car.
One step away from replication.
Oh, that coffee's hot!
Beady, beady, beady. Sorry, Buck.
So we've had our fun with that.
Yeah.
All right. That brings us to the end. But we have a question before you go. Our question that'll be on social media next week is, what movie plot hole ruined the entire experience for you?
Oh, so many.
There's one that stands out, but I'm going to save it for next week. That wasn't part of the plot and it wasn't a movie.
No.
But it was funny.
No, but it was oddly the best part of the episode.
Our Patreon topic this week, for those that are going to be listening first and watching later and timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, is how did we get into coding? Good question. Craig and I both do a bit of coding and scripting and whatnot, so we'll give a little bit of an inside story on that if you want to hear more about it.
I can give you a hint. It's a lot of headbanging.
You listen to AC/DC? No.
Well,
all right. That brings us to the end of the show. So I will play the end of the show music, and we appreciate you giving us your time this week. Thanks for hanging out with us, whether it was live on YouTube and Facebook, or if you were watching later or listening later. Thank you very much for being part of the Technorama family. We wish you all the best. Safe, stay healthy, wash your hands, wipe your face, keep off the grass.
Wear masks.
Duloc is a special place, whatever that song goes. All right, I slipped into Shrek mode for a second right. What else? Be nice to each other, like we always are on this show. And until next time, wish you all the best. See you in a week. No, Craig's going to be off next week, but we will. Yep. We are still preparing for our live Dragon Con show with Clinton Alvord from Comedy Forecast. So stay tuned for that. Until then, give us a binary high five, Craig.
Live long and prosper. Oh, that's the wrong show. 101.
Don't put on the red shirt.